Okay. So last week we had a shiur all about some of the halachos and the minhagim of Elul. And I wanted to continue. I mentioned that we were going to split up Rosh Hashanah into two parts. The first part was the general halachos and minhagim, and then today we were going to do the halachos of shofar. So there really is more than enough for a full shiur just on an overview of the halachos of shofar, and I would like to get started with that now. So the first and most basic question, for those of you in Rabbi Tarragon's shiur, this will be in a more in-depth way the theme of my shiur on Thursday. You'll be getting the Makor tomorrow morning. But the most basic and in-depth question that the Rishonim already ask, and certainly the Achronim then discuss, about shofar is, what is the actual mitzvah of shofar? You probably have even maybe heard this basic question. Is it the sounding of the shofar, the tekiah, everyone with me, the sounding of the shofar? Or is it the actual hearing of the sounds? Is it the tekiah? Or is it the shmia? Now, if you're the person who's actually blowing the shofar, so then you do both, right? You blow the shofar, and hopefully you hear your own sounds. But for everyone else in the shul, or the base medrash, right, you're only listening. And the question is, how are you yotze? What is the basic mitzvah? And in fact, this seems to be a very fundamental machlokes in the Rishonim. Rabbeinu Tam, none other than the Rabbeinu Tam, is quoted in his own Sefer HaYashar, as well as by the Rosh. He says that the mitzvah is to sound the shofar, tekiyas ha-shofar. However, a number of other Rishonim, most prominently the Rambam, are of the view that the main mitzvah is not the sounding of the shofar, not tekiyas shofar, but shmias ha-shofar, hearing the sounds. In other words, according to the Rambam and those who agree with him, even the person blowing, even the Baal Tokeya, as we call him, is really not yotzei because he's blowing the shofar, but because he can hear the sounds no better or worse, no different than the rest of us. The most explicit and obvious and initial nafka mina of this question is, what bracha should we make? That's actually the context of the Rosh. He quotes different opinions. Some say that it's some form of litkoa or al tkias shofar. Of course, that's not our practice. What do we say? Lishmoa kol shofar. And that's actually the opinion of the Rambam and those that follow him. And again, it's explicit in the Rishonim. You don't need a Rebbe, a Rosh Hashiva, or an Achron to fill in the gaps. The Lumdus is explicit in the Rishonim. If you hold that the mitzvah is to hear, so then you'll obviously reflect that in the Nusach of the Bracha. If you hold that it is to sound, to blow, then that will be reflected in the Nusach. So that's the first very basic question. What is the Nusach of the Bracha, and what is the Nafkamina? There are a number of other questions that hinge on this, which we won't get into, quite a few. And it's also worth noting that there are a number of Gemaros that seem to contradict each other. In other words, whichever Shita and Rishonim you hold, you may have some Gemaras that prove your position, but have other Gemaras that contradict your position. So, in particular, in the Achronim, they try to resolve these various Gemaras and finesse the different Shitos. And in fact, there are some Achronim, Rav Soloveitchik actually quotes this opinion from his grandfather, Rav Chaim, who suggests that perhaps, despite the simple reading of the Rishonim, given all the contradictory evidence that we have in the Gemaras, we have to actually maintain that they're both true on some level. That, as they say in Yiddish, Tzvei Dinim. Right, that they're both true. Tzvei is trei, two in Yiddish. Right, that they're both true. That there are aspects of the mitzvah which are the shmia, aspects of the mitzvah which are the tekiah. What would be the different? What are the different aspects? So again, not for now. For those of you who will be hearing shir from me, so we'll get more into depth then. But for now, basically, again, basic question 101. We're doing an overview. I'm not trying to get too deep in anything, or we won't finish what we need to do. But as a basic overview of the mitzvah of shofar, again, the most basic question you can ask about any mitzvah: what do you have to do? What is the mitzvah? So, in fact, that is a machlokes between Rabbeinu Tam and the Rambam. Each one of them have their helpers, but that's the basic machlokes. And the most obvious and initial nafkamin is: what should the bracha be? Our minhag lishmoa kol shofar obviously reflects the opinion of the Rambam and those that follow him. Okay, that is the first issue. The next issue is a huge one, will take us a little bit a while to trace. It's not that complicated if you have a master teacher. But it can be complicated and you have to kind of pull it all together. So I've spent Satai doing the heavy lifting for you, so I'm happy to go through with you. But still, even as I present it, you got to concentrate, or you might miss, or at least get some confusion here. And that is, again, I would say the second most obvious question, which is, okay, now that we know it's to either blow or to listen to the sounds, but how many sounds? How many kolos? So who knows, who can remember from year to year, how many sounds do we actually hear? We hear 100. Okay, the question is, how do we go from 0 to 100? Where in the world does that number come from? So here we're going to see, that the Gemara and then the Rishonim trace the evolution and the development of this mitzvah over a number of stages. Step one. The Gemara and Rosh Hashanah and the Mishnah on Daf Lamed Gimel, Amud Bet, through Lamed Dalet, Amud Aleph, tell us that every trua has to be preceded and followed by a tekiah. In other words, each line, each unit is a unit of three. Tekiah, trua, tekiah. That's a triple, if you will. And there has to be three of them. A unit is three of three. You have three lines of tekiah, trua, tekiah. So that, the Gemara learns from Psukim, that's the drasha, that the basic mitzvah of shofar is a trua with a tekiah lefaneha, a tekiah achareha, a preceding tekiah and a concluding tekiah. In fact, the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Tav Kuf Tzadi, that's chapter 590, Sif Aleph, the Shulchan Aruch, one second please, I'll take your question in a minute, the Shulchan Aruch quotes this, and he paskins that mida oraisa, the basic mitzvah is how many kolos? Who knows how to do 3 times 3? It's amazing, you guys got into gush. It's 9, right? Amazing, right? Math geniuses, all of you. So we have 9 kolos. The basic mitzvah would seem to be, from this Gemara, 9 sounds. Yes, question.
I was going to say, the preceding kolos would be the last one, so the preceding one.
No, it's, you can't double up. Right, it's 1, 1, 1, stop, 1, 1, 1, stop, then do it again, 3rd time. All right, tekiah, trua, tekiah, tekiah, trua, tekiah, tekiah, trua, tekiah. That's the, seems to be the basic mitzvah. So step one in the mitzvah is that it's the mitzvah of 9. 9 kolos would be how much you have to hear on Rosh Hashanah. However, the Gemara there, again on Daf Lamed Dalid, Amun Aleph, tells us about a takana or a statement of Rabbi Avohu. Yes, yes. And Rabbi Avohu seems to say, this is the one way of reading the Gemara, or the simple way of reading the Gemara, although we'll amplify it in a moment, that there was a suffix, a doubt, as to what the actual proper sound of the trua is. Anyone with this machlokas? What are the terms? Anyone recall? What's the terms of the Gemara? What's the suffix? Excellent, excellent. Kornblau. Is it gnuche galach? Or Yelule Yalal. I'll say that a few times fast, it could be a little bit of a tongue twister. In other words, the Gemara assumes that the trua, the broken sound, reflects some sort of crying. However, the Gemara is not clear what type of crying. And broadly speaking, the Gemara says there's two ways a person can cry. You with us? There's two ways a person can cry. There's genuche ganach, that's like wailing, like a little bit longer. Right? That's wailing. And then there's, you know, sometimes after you've had a good wail, as you're trying to calm down, right, but you're not there yet, there's like more of a staccato, like short bursts. That's yelule yalal. Genuche ganach or yelule yalal. Of course, we're more familiar with the terms shvarim and trua. What we call colloquially trua is actually only one possibility in the Gemara. That's the second one, that it's this staccato burst. Like that kind of cry. But the Gemara also considers what you and I call a shvarim as the alternate possibility, just so that we don't get confused, so we came up with these two new names. But in fact, there's really only one term initially used in the Gemara, and that is trua. There's just two underpinnings of it. Now, before we get into how this then multiplies the number of sounds, there's a very important machloket that the Rishonim have on this Gemara, just trying to understand what is it talking about. The Rambam in Hilchos Shofar, Perek Gimel, Halacha Beis, the Rambam says basically the Gemara, simple reading, Kipshuto, the Gemara says there was a real bona fide suffix at some point in history, if not initially, then at some point in history, the people simply weren't sure what the right thing to do was. Therefore, the Rambam understands the Gemara, because we weren't sure, at some point when this suffix became widespread, Rabbi Avo came along and said, since we're no longer sure, we have to fulfill every possible option. What is every option? So we could either do three sets of what you and I call shvarim, if that's the correct understanding. We can do three sets with what you and I call trua. Or, Levo says, perhaps, you know, a good cry, a gezunta cry, has both. Maybe we can do tkiya, shvarim, trua, tkiya. Three of those. If you add that up, fingers and toes, what do we get?
30.
30, right? Because the shvarim trua is actually four, right? Yes? Whose phone is that?
Is this right about the Gemara that we have to do,
Yes, the Rabbi, that's where Rabbi Vo comes and says, as the Rambam understands the Gemara, but Rabbi Vo, this seems to be a simple understanding of the Gemara, the Rabbi Vo says, because we're not sure what it is anymore, we can't just blow three. The Gemara had said, oh, it's enough to just do tekiah, trua, tekiah, but since we don't know what the trua is, we have to do all three varieties of that, which will end up giving us 30 sounds. Yes? It's a good question, not for now. Anyway, but I want to just point out before we move on, even though that is the simple understanding of the Gemara, and the Rambam does endorse it explicitly, there is a well-known sheet of Rav Haigon. You know, after the Gemara, before the Rishonim, we have the Gaonic period, right? Nowadays, right, anyone who is a big rabbi becomes a Gaon or a Gain, depending on if you're Litvish or not. I know I had really made it as a rabbi because I was once at a neighborhood wedding that was actually made in Lakewood, and I got called up for a bracha under the chuppah as Harav HaGaon David Gottlieb. That's right. You could call me the Gradag, that works, the Gradag. Okay? So, anyway, covet is cheap nowadays, but anyway, but I took it. I wasn't like, who, me? What? I was like, yeah. Anyway, so that's now. But there was actually a historical period where the heads of the yeshivos in Bavel were known as a gaon. It was basically, I guess, what we would use a functionally equivalent of Rosh Yeshiva. So Rav Haigon, who's one of the most famous and influential of the gaonim, is quoted by the Ran, the Rosh, other Rishonim in our Masechta on Rosh Hashanah, who says, no, come on, you're really telling me they didn't know? I mean, what did they do until then, Rabbi Avohu? Like, how could they not know? Look around, what were they doing? Ask your father, ask your grandfather. It can't be that it was a suffix. They were really confused in the Gemara. He doesn't accept that. Rather, says Rabbi Avohu, they're both right. It's not that one's correct, we just don't know which is the correct one. We've lost the Masorah. Said Rabbi Haigon, in fact, they're both right. They're both right. And therefore, pre-Rabbi Avohu, if you were in, I don't know, Los Angeles, maybe they did Genuchei Ganach. If you were in London, they did you Leilalal, and it wasn't a big deal. So why did Rabbi Avohu come along and change? What was Rabbi Avohu's chiddush? Why couldn't he leave well enough alone? Rabbi Avohu was bothered, says Rabbi Haigon, that if you go to two different communities, and maybe they're not on the other ends of the world, like London and Los Angeles, maybe they're both like in England, or they're both in California, right? Or they're two down the block from each other in Los Angeles. Says Rabbi Haigon, the worry was if this would continue, Nira Kishtei Toros. That's not, he didn't invent the term, but he implies it here, that we have an idea in Halacha that sometimes we like, again, as much as possible, this is not our topic today for when yes and when no, because it's clearly a complicated topic, but Rabbi Haigon invokes this idea that there is a value of uniformity, right? There's one Torah, not two. And if you have people doing a mitzvah d'oraisa in such radically different ways, Nira Kishtei Toros, he felt that that would be too disunifying, too confusing about the Torah. And therefore, said Rav Haigon, even though they're both really right, and therefore theory you could really only blow one, either trua or tekiah, and you'd be fine, it's not nice. So you're going to tell all the trua people, no, get rid of that, do shvarim, what were they going to say? If it's good enough for my father, it's good enough for my grandfather, I'm not changing. Right? If you went all to the shvarim people, now you have to start doing trua. Right? So he figured out, I'll do a b'shalom. Everyone do everything. Right? Then everyone gets their thing, no one gets upset. So it's just interesting. There might be, and I'm not discussing if there's any nafkaminas or not, but just to understand what happened. How did we get from 9 to 30, and that we're only at 30, gentlemen? Shul will be a lot shorter if this is all we had to do.
done.
So 9 to 30. You'll see. No, yeah. Have faith. You have little faith. Okay? I'll back up my statements. You can challenge them when I get to them. Okay? But now we've jumped. Okay, we've taken step 2 in our evolution. We've gone now from 9 kolos to 30. Just so you should be aware, the Mishnah Berurah points out, just again, if you hear this terminology you should be familiar with, if you're not already, these are the ones that we blow, these first 30 before Musaf, and this is what was referred to by those who know, or in the postgame, as the Tikios Dimiyushav, the sitting Tikios. Now the truth is, I don't know about you, but I've never been in a shul where people sit, but the truth is that in theory you could sit. We don't sit out of kavod for the Tikios. But it's not like Mi'ikra Din, and therefore someone who really can't sit, there's no problem in these first 30. As we'll get to in a moment, the next 30, which are part of the Shemona Esrei, so those are known as the Tkios Dima'umad, because they are said in the Shemona Esrei when we're supposed to be standing. But the ones before Musaf are known as the Tkios Dima'ushav. Yes?
9 times 3 is 27. Why are you increasing 30?
Because Shvarim Trua is not 3, it's 4. Tkios Shvarim Trua.
Also, supposing the Rav Haggam, would we then not have to do? Then we wouldn't have to do Shvarim Trua, because we know it's either Shvarim or Trua. So we would only do Shvarim.
No, he says it's not a suffix. The suffix, the Rambam says the real suffix. Is it this one, that one, or both?
Right, but he says it's not a suffix. So therefore, because they both work, then just do. Were the three types of people did either A?
It's an interesting question. I have to double check. Did Rav Haggam?
Otherwise, we should only do A and B.
It's interesting. Okay, I'll double check that for you. I think he assumes also that we do the same 30, but. It's interesting, Ara. I have to think about that more. Yes. Do you have a question? Okay,
maybe
just but right, maybe that's what it was. I don't remember. If
that would work.
Yeah, so if that's true, then I'm sure that's obviously the simple explanation. Yes.
So why is this different from any other machloket?
I said before, why is it that in some cases we have this idea of the want for uniformity, in other cases we seem to be more comfortable with the. It's a good, fair question, but not for now. Okay? That's a big, complicated, important issue. But that will end the Hilcha Shofar part of this year. So I'm gonna punt on that one if that's okay, in honor of football season and the Buckeyes winning opening game yesterday. Okay, that's right, baby, back to back. Okay, now the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and Daf Tezayin tells us that we blow twice. Two sets of 30. Not only the first 30, but another 30 Tkiyostim Umad. The Gemara says, why do we do the same thing twice? We don't shake Lulav twice, right? We don't light the menorah twice each night. We don't, right? At least in theory, we're not supposed to be doing, you know, Maror twice or something like that. Why do we do Shofar twice? So the Gemara has a very famous and intriguing formulation. Says the Gemara, Kedei le Arvev Esa Sutton Kornblau. You don't even have brownies and you're on fire. It's impressive. See, if you would have come on time, you would have known what we were referring to. But you're still on fire, and that's even better than brownies. Excellent. Shekoyah. Kedei la'arvev. No, we do not believe in that kind of satan. Okay? Says the Gemara, we repeat, or we do shofar twice to confuse the satan. Now, what exactly does that mean? Many, many drushos of rabbis have been to discuss this. There are two very famous answers on the page in the Gemara. Tosfos quotes an opinion that the second time we blow, somehow the Sutton thinks that this is Mashiach coming, being heralded by the shofar, and the Sutton's like, whoa, if Mashiach's here, game over, I'm out. I got to retire to Florida, but like I don't need to like start getting into the head of the mind of the Jews. Rashi says something I think more meaningful on a Avodas Hashem level. Rashi says, you know what the Irbuv is? Because he says how much we love the mitzvah. He says our chavivus, our love of the mitzvah, and that somehow neutralized the satan. I don't want to discuss now what the satan means, what exactly this means. I'm just telling you that this is what the Gemara says, that we do the second set of 30. Again, not that those aren't good questions also, but we got to stick with the Hilcha Shofar. That's our topic. We do the second set of 30 for this reason. Now I'm saying it this way, but you should just know there is a machloket. Which is the one that's La'arvei with a Sutton? Or another way, which is the more important one? The second 30 or the first 30? Is the second 30 kind of a repeat? Or is the first 30 just kind of flexing and stretching a little bit and getting ourselves ready for the second 30? There's interesting machlokas about which ones are more important. That doesn't really, really matter, but Just you shetedu lechem, just so you should know, there is that machlokas. But the bottom line is, combine, why do we have two sets of 30? The answer is this idea of la'arvev esasatan. The Rishonim ask a question. I thought we're not allowed to add on to the Torah. Why isn't this baltos? That's a pretty basic question, right? So, in fact, Baal Tosef is a very big topic. Some of the really important formulations in Rishonim actually come from this Gemara and from our topic. Because in explaining why you could add extra a second set of shofar, so some Rishonim give explanations which are really, really quite relevant across the board. Just to tell you two of the famous ones, although there's more than two, Tosfos there says that Baal Tosef never means repeating the same mitzvah. Right? If you take a lulav and take a lulav again, that would be pointless perhaps. But it's not Baal Tosef. That's not the definition. Taking the mitzvah as it's been ordained by the Torah or Chazal and repeating it, that's not Baal Tosef. So that's all we're doing. We took the Serum Shofar, blew it again. The Rashba holds something which is also important, but it takes a different attack. The Rashba says it's only Baal Tosef if you think that the Torah told you to do it twice. But when the Chachamim make a takana, and we know that it is from the Chachamim, there's nothing wrong with that at all. That's an entire institution called Dinim Derabanan. This is no different, says Rashba, than all the other Dinim Derabanan. Why is it every Din Der Baal Tosef? Says Rashba. Exactly this. It's only Baal Tosef if the Rabbanim were, so to speak, tricking the people into thinking it is from the Torah. But in fact, as long as it's clear that it's rabbinic, that is not a problem. That is not a problem of Baal Tosef. Yes?
So why did they add it?
Well, no matter which approach you say, the Gemara says the reason they added it is this idea of kedei la'arvev hasatan. Okay, it's just a question of what about any other issue, like, for example, Baal Tosef. So that there's more than two answers, but I just shared two of them with you. Okay. Yes.
When it comes to the practical application, is it the different sets almost hold different relevance? They hold some different messages. What we the second set, we say this is more toward the hasatan than the first one.
Again, which one is the Arvivas Asatan one and which one is the main one? That's what I'm saying. That itself is the question. Are there more practical nafkamina? I'm not 100% sure, but philosophically at least, or conceptually, yes, that is the difference. Yes. I don't think so. Again, we're going to get to in a minute how we blow the second 30, because if you remember from year to year, it's actually different. It's more complicated because of Shmon Esrei. We're going to get to that, okay? But I don't know that that's connected to the Satan angle, okay? Yes?
If you hold that the first are just warming up, so you're already Yotze of the Mezvah, so is there any Afkamina to that?
I'm not sure. It's a good point. That's why I said I'm not sure. I don't want it would be a shir in itself to understand the relationship between the two, but Bapashtus, you're Yotze with the first 30 Midaraisa. That's correct. And that's why people who can't stay the whole time are trying to make sure to hear the first 30, and that's usually okay if they can't stay for the whole time. Yes?
Is Tosu implying that the second blowing of Shofar is also Doraita or that?
I think it would assume it's Darabanan. I don't think, again, the La'arvi is a sudden idea in the Gemara has to be true no matter what. Again, I think it's clear, I mentioned that I think before, but it's good that you give me a chance to repeat it. I think it's pretty clear that 9, which turned into 30, is the only thing which is really Doraisa. Everything beyond that has to be Durabanan. Again, Tosla's answer would be good, even if a person, you know, doing a mitzvah. If you repeal of a second, that's less, that's nothing. But again, the fact that you're doing a mitzvah, which is a Doraisa mitzvah, twice is not Baal Tosef. That doesn't mean that you're doing it a second time as Doraisa. So you're also, the second time you did it as Darabanan. But you're not doing Chanukah, right? That's a rabbinic mitzvah. This is Shofar. Shofar is a Doraisa mitzvah, but you're doing it twice. Doing a Doraisa twice, even if the second time is rabbinic, but you're doing a Doraisa twice, doing a mitzvah twice. I don't know if it's Doraisa versus Darabanan, but doing any one mitzvah, not changing the mitzvah, but just repeating the mitzvah. That's the main point of Tosas. Maybe I wasn't clear. Just repeating a mitzvah is not Baal Tosef. Changing a mitzvah might be. In other words, if you added something to the mitzvah, you added a classic example, you added an extra parsha of the tefillin or something. That's changing the mitzvah. But repeating the mitzvah is nice. We can have one more question, then we got to move on. Yes?
So,
Matan.
If it's totally mattered,
what do you mean 5? Like, we do 30.
Like, why don't we do the 30 times 5 times? Like,
Why do we only have 100? Why don't we have like?
We didn't get to it. So far, we're only at 60. We're not there yet. But it's a good question, though. Okay. So a lot of things. I got to move on a little bit. Okay. A lot of important things we still have to get through in terms of the specifics of this second set. So number one, what sounds do we blow? Can we put away like the toys and stuff? There's a lot of stuff going on, which is clearly not from the shir. The rebbeim are not as foolish as you think we are. So just because we don't say anything all the time doesn't mean we don't see. And it's not respectful to Torah, it's not respectful to the people, and it's certainly not respectful to the teacher. So I don't want to have to ask that again, please, okay? The whole system in the yeshiva with laptops and phones is totally based on trust. It would be really bad for everyone if we couldn't trust you guys, okay? Anyway, so what do we blow? So the Gemara tells us that there's a connection, as you all know if you remember from year to year. We know that there's a connection between the second set and the brachos of Musaf. On Rosh Hashanah, unlike Musaf or other Yomim Tovim, in addition to the basic structure, Shmoneh Esrei, we add three sections of other brachos known as Malchios, Zichronos, and then finally of Shofros. So we break up our second set of 30 into, in fact, three sets of 10. We do 10 at the end of Malchios, 10 at the end of Zichronos, and 10 at the end of Shofros. The question is what to blow. Because again, we had this whole suffix of, is it crying, weeping, what's going on? So in fact, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, and again, the Shulchan Aruch is really based on earlier Rishonim, there are different minhagim. The Shulchan Aruch himself says that for each of the three brachos, do a different thing. It's like wild. So, and therefore, in the first brachos of Malchios, you do Tkia, Shvarim, Trua, Tkia. Three sets of that, or ten. In shorthand, in the halachic terminology, nomenclature, that's known as Tashrat. You do Tashrat three times, which is actually 12, right? Tashrat three times, three times four. Tkia, Shvarim, Trua, Tkia, once, twice, three times. That's Malchios. In Shofros, excuse me, in Zichronos, you do Tashat, Tkia, Shvarim, Trua, three times. And finally, says the Shulchan Aruch, in Shofros, you do Tarat, Tkia, Trua Tkia, three times. So the same machlokas, which we put all together in the first 30, says Shulchan Aruch, you should divide that up, do different things all three times. The Ramah says, no, we don't want to change each time. But rather, he says, we should do the same thing all three. But what's the same thing? We're not sure. What's the safest thing to do if you're doing all three? You're going to do the same thing, all three brachos. What's the safest one to do? Shvarim Trua. And that's the Ramah Shita. Makes a lot of sense. Do Tkiah Shvarim Trua three times. Meaning at the end of Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofros. But, at least for a typical Ashkenazi shul, which is obviously what I'm most familiar with, that is not what we do. There's a third minhag out there. Again, many Sfaradim follow the Shulchan Aruch. There are some Ashkenazim following the Ramah, but the more common Ashkenazi minhag is that which is quoted by the Mishneh Berurah and also by the Mateh Ephraim. You remember, it was either a week ago or 2 weeks ago, I don't remember, I introduced you to the Mateh Ephraim from Ephraim Zalman Margolios, big banker, and then a big rov in Galicia. The Mateh and the Mishneh Berurah give a third approach, which is actually the much more common minhag nowadays, I think, among Ashkenazic shuls, and that is that in the set of three, remember, we do three times of a trua with the tkiah bordering it. So therefore, they suggest we should just do all three options in each bracha. So in Malchios, we do one line of tkiah, shvarim, tkiah, one line of tkiah, trua, tkiah, and one line of tkiah, shvarim, trua, tkiah. This, the Mishneh Berurah and the Mateh Ephraim agree with the Ramah, again, against the Machaber, against the Shulchan Aruch, that we shouldn't change from Malchios and Chronos to Shofros. We should do the same thing in all three brachos of Musaf. But they just disagree. Instead of doing, you know, a whole set of Tkiah Shvarim Truas, they say, no, do one line of Tkiah Shvarim Trua, one line of Tkiah Trua Tkiah, and one line of Tkiah Shvarim Trua Tkiah. Again, everyone's trying to get to the same place of making sure we cover all our bases, doing another set during Musaf, and covering all of our bases, because again, it's the same suffix that still haunts us, what is exactly the trua. And as I said, I think that the most widespread Ashkenazic custom, for sure, I think is not what the Ramah says, but what the more recent poskim say of the Mishneh Berurah and the Arizal. And the Mateh Ephraim, excuse me. Okay? Now, that is a very important thing, again, just whatever shul you're from, whatever siddur you're in, depending on your community, right? You may be familiar with the differences, so this is how you understand. This is very important, just so you should be informed to understand what's going on. This is why we do what we do. A second issue in these in this second unit during Musaf is the question of when during Musaf do we do them. So probably, depending on if you daven in a either Sephardi or Ashkenazi shul, or a Nusach Sfard Hasidish type shul, or at least Nusach Sfard Minog, you may have different practices. So who davens in a really, really Ashkenazi shul here? Okay, do anyone remember? No, Maimonides does not count, because the Rav was different, and he had his own ways of things. Nothing personal, I'm saying. It's just, it's not typical Ashkenazi. A typical classical Ashkenazi shul. Do you remember from year to year, when do you blow the second set of 30? Okay, who remembers? But when? Chazar, yes, exactly. That's what I was getting at. Yes, yeah, you're right, and you're right. Yes. So the typical Ashkenazi minhag is to do this during Chazar Hashatz. When the Chazan gets to the end of Malchus, Achronos, and Shofros, we do it. However, there is another shita which is more common in Svaradi shuls or Ashkenazim who are davening Nusach Svarad, i.e., with the Hasidic inspiration, and that is when do you do it? During the Tefillah Balachash. Do you daven a shul like that?
Yeah.
What are you daven?
It's very cool.
Okay, fair enough. Anyone daven in like a Nusach Sfarad shul? Also with Tefillah Balachash? Yes, that's how I grew up. I went away to school like at 13, but when I was a kid, the shul I grew up in as a kid in Cincinnati, so that was a Nusach Sfarad shul. Huh? Not everyone. I just said, no, not everyone at all. Does your shul do that way? In Tefillah Balachash or Tefillah... Why did I say what I said? Because if you, the Arizal was one of those, Arizal, the great Kabbalist, the Arizal was one of the people who said he felt you really had to connect the brachos to the tekios, and therefore we do it in the silent Shemona Esrei. And again, many, many Hasidic communities take their cue because of the mystical angle from the Arizal, and therefore that is the widespread Hasidic practice. Ravadia Yosef, and before him, the Kaf HaChaim, say that the Sfardi practice is to also do it like that, to do it in Tefillah Balachash, but the Mishneh Berurah, the Mateh Ephraim, say that the non-Hasidic Ashkenazic practice, again, this is pretty much reflected in our quick little unscientific survey, is to do it after the Chazar Hashatz. There's no right way, there's no wrong way, whatever your minhag is fine, although clearly if you're Sfaradi or in a Nusach Sfarad Shul, it's more complicated, because you try as best as you can to kind of stay up with the Chazan, right? If the whole point is to be saying these at the time of the Brochos, if you're still in Malchios and they're blowing for Shofaros or vice versa, you're much faster than the Chazan, that's certainly less than ideal. So there are some shuls where they have the Chazan try himself in his quiet Shemoneh Esrei, the Chazan or the Rabbi, to daven a little bit out loud so people can kind of keep same pace. But that's a little bit more complicated. It's certainly, I think it's a much less common minhag, again, unless you're really from a good Sephardi background and people want to keep their minhagim, which of course they should, but when new shuls are starting, so to speak, and they're not sure kind of what to do, it's always the easier option to go with the Chazar Hashatz one. Dude, in Tefillah Balachash. Yes, yes, I said that, and they should if that's their minhag. Yes, quickly. Yes, if you're ahead, yes. Yeah, it's a more complicated question, which is what you should do if you're behind. But I think the answer to that question is you should stop and listen quietly, even though it's just...
What do you do if you're...
I said, I think you should stop and listen quietly, kind of like the Kedusha issue.
They try to go slow.
Huh?
They try to go slow.
Right, they try to go slow so that nobody, you know, the people are waiting for the Chazan, not vice versa. Yes?
And the slower guys yell out the
kiosk
beforehand?
And no one's yelling out, no, because that would be a hefsek.
Oh,
right, well, we have a Sidurim nowadays, so... Although, again, even with Sidurim, Baal Tokeos are concentrating... You know, typically the rabbi is the makri, as it's called. I used to liken myself to a catcher. So you know, the Baal Tokeos would say to me, "You called a good game, Rabbi," and I would say, "You blew a good game, pitcher." You know. So tekiya. You know, anyway, sometimes I'd pause a little bit and get him off his rhythm. No, I'm just kidding. You don't want to do that. They're like musicians. They have their rhythm, and the truth is, it's good for the Baal Tokeos and the makri to practice. So you kind of, you know what each other likes, so to speak. You can get together. Yes.
Aren't there also people who do both?
Hypothetically. I've never seen a shul like that.
Yeah, that's what they do.
Cool. Okay, so maybe so some wanted, it's maybe a version of the Sephardi minhag. Okay. Yes.
I thought that's just the Ashkenazim shul.
I think Rav Soloveitchik did that.
No.
To do both.
No, I'm saying, the Ashkenazim shul has to make up 30 at the end.
We didn't get to the end yet. We're still on the 60, gentlemen.
No, but the ones, the Sephardi shul.
If they do both, and they have less to finish, yes. Yeah, don't worry, I'm keeping count. I got it all up here, yes.
Now, does the Ramah say that Tashrat only covers all sounds for the second set, but not for the first sound, clearly.
It's a good question. Excellent. Very sure you're also sharp, too. Do you have brownie? Really? I think the brownie put the guys to sleep. All right. Anyway, yes. Yeah, so Ravaji Yosef, you want to write this down so you can look this up? Yabia Omer. Or Chaim. Volume 1, Chelek Aleph. Simin Lamed Vav. So Ravaji Yosef exactly discusses your question. And he connects these two minhagim of when to do it, you know what to do, tashrat, tarat, ta-ta-ta. He connects that back to the original machloket between the Rambam and Rav Haigon. Are we really not sure? Or is that they're both okay? And that's exactly the underlying premise of your question, which is excellent, right? Spot on.
What's the source again?
Yabia Omer. That's one of the volumes of responsa of Ravaji Yosef. Okay, Ravaji Yosef just died recently. Great Sephardic chief rabbi, founder of the Shas political movement. I'm less enamored with that than his halacha, but anyway, not to get into politics. But he wrote some very, very impressive, important volumes of responsa of Tshuvot. And his main volume is called Yabia Omer. Okay, many volumes. Or Achayim, Volume 1, Simon Lamed Vav. If you want, at some point in the Beit Midrash or on Bar Ilan, CD-ROM, I'm happy to show you how to look that up. Okay, so now we've got the 60. How do we get to 100, gentlemen? Where do we go to 100? How do we get there? Or according to the Ramah, technically you have a little bit less, right? Because if you did 12, then you have less. Okay, fair enough, if you're counting at home. Anyway, but be that as it may, how do we do the final ones? How do we get to 100? So first of all, why do we need 100? Who has asked that before? Matan, somebody asked. Why do we need 100? Where did 100 come from? So Tosvos quotes from the Sefer HaAruch, very famous Tosvos, Lamed Gimel, Lamed Beis, that the minog of 100 comes from, of all places, the mother of Sisera. In Sefer Shoftim, we hear about this terrible general who is defeated by Barak and Devorah, but she's waiting for her son. She hopes to come home triumphantly, and the longer she waits, the more pessimistic she gets that he's going to come home. And the tradition is, based on a pasuk in Shoftim, in Perek Hey, Pasuk Kafchet, 5:28, that she cried 100 cries. And therefore, patting ourselves after her, because as we've said before, there's an element of crying in Shofar, we cry 100 tears. Now, the obvious question is, what in the world does the mother of this Russia, Sisera, have to do with us? Great question. Many rabbis have given rushes over that. We're not going to discuss that now, but that is a very fair question. But the basic answer is the minog evolved. Again, it's not d'oraita. We've gone way past the d'oraita at this point, obviously. The basic minog, the idea that we're shooting for 100 in those communities that do that, which is pretty common. It's not nearly universal. So that, Tosfos says, from the Aruch, comes from, again, from this somewhat surprising source of the mother of Sisera. Now, when do we do these final blasts, right? If we do 30 and 30, so we have 40 left, when do we do these? So this, there are different minhagim. If you have three different shuls here, you might be doing three different things. But there's some variation. Some shuls do all of them right after Shmon Esrei, right after Chazar Hashatz. They do another 40 to finish up. Some do some then, and some in the middle of Shmon Esrei. Some shkoyach. Some when do some after Yehi Shmei Rabba in the middle of Shmon Esrei, and then the final ones after Oseh Shalom Bimramav. Whichever way your shul does it is fine. All the minhagim are good, but there are different minhagim. So if you go from one shul to the next, if the yeshiva does it differently the way you grew up, if at some point in the near future you're in a different shul and it doesn't do the way yeshiva does, or the way your home shul does, it's also fine. One way or another, after Chazar Hashatz, we fill in the final 40, and then we get to 100. And of course, we know that the minhag of having the Tekiah Gedola, that's just a nice minhag. It's certainly good for the kids. They can look at their watch and see how long he did it. Last year he did better, and yesterday he did better. Anyway, so that's that. Yes?
Is there a concept of any yeshiva doing the extra, one of the shitas doing extra
words? I think there might be, as far as I know, they don't do that in this yeshiva, at least not on the base medrash. There might be yeshivas, maybe brisk, certain ones who are more halakhically neurotic. They might do that. I think they say that from Rav Velvel, the Briskarov, Salvage's uncle, but I've never been in a shul or a yeshiva that did it, but that doesn't mean that there aren't people who do it.
They
kind of figure out ways to do all 100 with all the different permutations.
Or even do more.
Or, that they would end up doing much more if they did that. Right. Yes?
What's the point of finding the second number, the second 30, if the whole point is to get to 100 in the first place? Why don't we just get the second set of 30 into 100 as well?
I don't understand the question.
In the sense that the third 40 at the end are bound by this 100.
So those are the fill-in.
The fill-in. But the second set, would you say they've got more validity because they have...
Yes.
Yes, because
again, because once, yes, let me clarify, it's a good question. Once we're not sure about how to do the 9, so then we get to 30. But even though 30, let's assume like the Rambam, are based on a suffix, but the 30 are our way of, are the unit, right? So the unit of the Daraisa are the 30. The fact that we, La'arvivas HaSutton, do it twice, so that's the status of the two 30s. Now, one of them is not Daraisa, whichever one you say is the more important one. The other one's not the Daraisa one, because Daraisa, you don't need 60. That's for sure not true. It's because of this minhag of La'arvei v'sasatan, this Darabanan idea. But those two are clearly more important than the final ones. I think that would be fair to say. Yes. Okay? Now, a few more important points. We have 15 minutes. Let's try to do a few more important points. Number one, again, this is, you have to be really listening closely. Or maybe you, your brother, your father, somebody is the rabbi or the Baal Tokeah, or else you might miss this. I don't know if the average person knows this, but within the discussion of Shvarim Trua, that one sound where we combine the two, Shvarim Trua, there is a machlokes whether you can or must or may not have a breath in between Shvarim and the Trua. It sounds like a very minute detail. It is. But it's taken quite seriously in halacha. A big discussion. The terms that are used are, do you do Shvarim Shura b'neshima achat, with one breath? Or might it be allowed, or maybe even preferable, to do it b'shtei neshimot, with two breaths? If you look in the Shulchan Aruch, this is discussed in Siman Tov Kotzari, the Shulchan Aruch himself in Seif Dalid, paragraph 4, quotes both opinions at both Shitos, the Ramah, and again our friend the Mat Ephraim, we keep on coming back to him, he says that you should do, always throughout all 100, whenever you do Shvarim Trua, always take two breaths. Other poskim, including Rav Soloveitchik, said you should always do one breath when you do Shvarim Trua. But neither of those are the more prevalent custom. I think in most shuls that you go to, certainly not only when I grew up, but when I was the rabbi in Baltimore and I was the makri there, the more common minhag is as follows. And this is actually quoted in Shulchan Aruch, I think, as a preference. And that is that the first 30 are done with one breath. The second 30 are done with two breaths. And the last 40, dealer's choice. It doesn't really matter, one way or the other, whatever's easier for the Altokea. So when I was calling the game, when I was the catcher, so I made up, I don't know if this is so original, probably other people did it too, I think a friend of mine who was in the rabbinate before, earlier than me, gave me this advice. I think that's how I got the idea. But when I would practice with and actually do this with the Baal Tokea, in the first 30, when I would say Shvarim Trua, I would say Shvarim Trua, as I wouldn't breathe. But I would make a very exaggerated, noticeable breath in the second 30. I would say Shvarim Trua. Now, I don't know that if the average person picked up on it or not. It doesn't really matter. The main thing was it was a reminder to keep the Baal Tokeah. Well, just let me get through a little bit more, and then if we have time, we'll take the extra questions, okay? But I want the last 2 weeks through, Rabbi Liebtag started late because of me, and I'm going to try to break that trend today. But I didn't say I promise. I'll try. I mean, for all I know, he has a wedding he's about to go to or something. He might not even know, okay? Anyway. So that's one issue just to be aware of. Again, if you listen carefully enough, or you know someone who's about Tokeah, you can ask them what their practice is. But again, I think the more common practice nowadays is to split between the first and the second 30, and the last 40, not as important one way or the other. But we want to make sure we have a 30 with each, because it really is an unresolved suffix. Number one. And number two, another miscellaneous point, and that is the issue of hefsek. You may recall, I hope this is true, I think it's pretty prevalent in all the shuls. Rabbi will get up before you start and he'll tell you how it's important not to talk, even more than usual. It's not to talk from the beginning until the end. In fact, we take this so seriously that many shuls, including the one that I was the rabbi of, make the announcement that even if your practice is in general is to say Baruch Hu Uvaruch Shemo in the middle of a bracha, not to do it during the brachas on the shofar. Anyone remember a rabbi making that announcement? I used to make that announcement. Right? Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo is not nearly as central as Amen. It's not quoted in the Gemara. A lot of people don't even have the minhag to say it. I don't. But if you do say Baruch HaRoshimo, which many good Jews do, but if any time there's a question of Hefsek, we usually err on the side of keeping that out, just because that's how neurotic we can be and how careful we want to be. Now, this is not so clear that this really should be a Hefsek. Don't tell the rabbis this, right? And don't come back from yeshiva and say, the rabbi in Gush taught me you can talk. There's no Hefsek problem. You shouldn't, you can't. I made that announcement myself. But just in Lumdus, you should understand, it's not so clear why that is the case. As the Taz and other people point out, the real issue of Hefsek would be after the brachos, before you started blowing, in between the bracha and the mitzvah. But in the middle of a mitzvah, mi'ikar hadin, that's not really a Hefsek problem. It's not so clear that why that should be a real problem. But despite that fact, nevertheless, the Chai Adam, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and again, prevalent minog is that we try to be very careful and be makpid, that we shouldn't have any extraneous talking whatsoever from 0 to 100. Now again, based on everything you've seen, you've heard today, you know that clearly it's more serious during the first 30, it's very serious but slightly less until 60, and it's obviously a little bit less serious from 60 to 100. But again, no one should misunderstand me. Bottom line, you should not be talking. There should be no extraneous talking from the beginning until the end. What's extraneous? So the post can say, what about extra singing, right? Singing along with the chazan. So the post can markel. But again, even that's a suffix, right? Asking, you know, when's the having going to end, or what do you think mom made for lunch, right? That is certain, or, you know, what do you think about Hillary Clinton in her email or something, right? That should never be done in davening, never in shul, and certainly never at any point during the shofar. We should not be making a hefsek. That is for sure, even to the 100. That really is important to try to be makor. But obviously the singing along, anything for the davening, that's allowed. There are tshuvos, contemporary tshuvos, to discuss what if you go to the bathroom. Can you make sure to do it in between so you get back to hear the shofar? What about Asher Yatzar? So there are some who say you shouldn't make Asher Yatzar then, because maybe that's a hefsek, but I don't think that's the minhag. It's Eliezer, Rav Waldenberg, and the Minchas Yitzchak, Dayan Weiss, who was a Rav first in Romania, then after the Holocaust in England, and then afterwards he made Aliyah, and he was the head of the Eda Charedis in Yerushalayim. So they both paskin that Asher Yatzar is also okay. But again, the fact that you have the people discussing Asher Yatzar, singing along with the Chazan, even though they allow them both, but again, clearly that highlights how important, I just want to finish, okay, and then I'll take questions if we have time. That clearly highlights how seriously we take this halacha and the minhag of getting to 100. Two more points, then we're mamash done. Women, are women obligated in shofar or not? Everyone hopefully has a mommy that they love, sisters, one day a wife that they'll love, daughters hopefully that they'll love. Are women obligated in shofar or not? So first of all, clearly on a daraisa level, women are exempt from shofar. It is a classic example of a mitzvah aseh shehazman grama, a time-bound mitzvah. Nevertheless, there are some poskim, most famously I would say, Rabbi Akiva Eger, in his tshuvos, in the addendum, Hosafos to Simon Aleph, Rabbi Eger, he makes a sociological statement which he enshrines and invests with halachic significance. Says Rabbi Akiva Eger, in our day, he says already, 200 plus years ago, in our day, says Rabbi Akiva Eger, all women come to shul, all women hear the shofar. Sociological statement. Therefore, halachic statement, says Rabbi Akiva Eger, it's become like a neder, like an obligatory minhag for women to hear shofar. So does your mom have to go hear shofar? Does your sister, according to Rabbi Akiva Eger? Yes. Not on the same level that you or your father or your brothers do, but she is obligated, mitam minhag, or neder. Now, not everyone accepts that. Now, whether it's sociologically true or not, that's a separate question. I think it is true in all communities that I'm familiar with. Women really are makbid on themselves to come hear the shofar. But whether that, you can take that sociological reality and springboard off of that and say, therefore, all women, right? Let's say I'm a woman and I never did it before. But because all the women have been doing it for 200 years, therefore I'm obligated? There's a new thing called minhag women? Not everyone agrees that you could create such a halakhic reality. That's a debated point. Rav Avad Yosef has a tshuva, for example, not in Yabia Omer, which I quoted to you before, but he has a second volume of responses called Yechaved Da'as, where Rav Avadi has a tshuva. Let's say there's a woman who broke her leg or she was sick or something and she couldn't come to shul and she wasn't even going to be able to have someone come to her house to blow a 30 or something, which is usually what we do when someone can't come to shul. So what should she do? Is that a problem or not? So he says, no, if you can't, you can't. But he even discusses, does she need Hataras Nedarim? Now, if he took it very seriously, then maybe if she can't do it, she would really need Hataras Nedarim. In the end, if I remember correctly, his conclusion is that given that this is a one-time thing, we hope a fluke, because she really plans on next year hearing again, he holds she does not need Hataras Nedarim. But if a woman wanted to decide, I no longer feel obligated in shofar, and I'm no longer going to be going in the future to shofar blowing, I don't think Rav Avraham Yosef would approve of that, frankly. But if a woman wanted to do that, he would require her to do Hataras Nedarim. Last but not least, this is really relevant to everyone now, less than a week from now, Halacha L'maisa. Many, many yeshivas in Lithuania, and the minhag has spilled over to America and Israel as well, many, many yeshivas have the minhag to break for Kiddush before shofar blowing. It is almost unheard of. I wouldn't say none, but almost unheard of for a shul to do that. Anyone ever grew up in a shul that did that? Say, we got one, two. If you dive into the yeshiva, that doesn't count. I said a shul. Right, but yeshivas do this. That's correct. A lot of the great yeshivas in Europe did it. Many in Israel do it as well. It is a very problematic practice because the Shulchan Aruch quotes a halacha that most of you are not familiar with. Whereas that when you have a mitzvah kavua, you have a chiyuv, which has a set time where you're supposed to do it, you're not supposed to eat before you do that mitzvah. This is not connected to not eating before davening. That's an even more serious problem. But in general, Chanukah's coming. We're about to light Neros or Mariv. I'm not mean Shachar. When I said more serious, I meant like in the morning. But Mincha, Mariv, you're not supposed to do things, including eat before then. So how can it be there's a minhag in the East to eat before shofar blowing? This is a very serious question. 5 years ago, when I was here on sabbatical, I wrote a number of articles, which I never published. I have them all on the computer. One of the articles I wrote, I think it was about 10 pages, single space in Hebrew, is on this topic. So I'm just giving you the thumbnail sketch. A lot to say on this topic, but many poskim are bothered by this. And therefore, you basically have some poskim who say it's all wrong, you shouldn't do it, it's basically usur. But it's very hard to maintain that when you have so many of the main yeshivas for 100 years doing this. So we're not going to, you know, to come out and say it's all usur and wrong is kind of hard. So the postgame, I wouldn't say they twist themselves in a pretzel, that might be a little exaggerated, but the postgame really do strain themselves to try to figure out how do we justify this minhag. And there's two common explanations. Some suggest that the reason is because davening is so long, we want to make sure we have kavana for musaf, and we're weak and we're tired, therefore we eat a little bit to give ourselves chizuk for the for the musaf. Others say because davening is long, maybe by the time we finish musaf and then we get to lunch, it'll be after midday, after chatzos. And our Shabbos and Yontif, as some of you may know, we're not supposed to fast basically until, you know, at longer than chatzos. Even if we plan on eating, but we shouldn't be eating later than chatzos. But most shuls, most yeshivas certainly do finish davening later than that. So some suggest that's where the minhag is. There are different explanations to defend this. I wanted to double check before mentioning it today, what is the minhag of this yeshiva? So the meaning of the yeshiva is that they do have a kiddush.
Yeah.
Roughly speaking, about 80% of the people go out and eat. As I suspected, I asked one of the rabbayim, Rabbi Friedman, but I had a suspicion and he confirmed it. Rav Lichtenstein would not eat. That did not sound like a custom he would approve of. But it is the minhag of the yeshiva, which he happened, but he personally did not eat. He had a cup of water just to make sure he got out of the fasting issue, but he did not. Many Rosh Yeshivas, many poskim do, certainly many yeshivas do. So they're going to be a kiddush here. If you really feel you need it, then that's the minhag of the yeshiva, it's the minhag of many yeshivas. Okay, you want to be mekel. But really, I would say if you don't feel like you need it, personally, I would think that's a good chumrah not to go down. Because there's a reason that Rav Lichtenstein and many others don't, because it's really a questionable minhag. We accept it, so we allow it. But if you need it, then you for sure should do it. But you shouldn't, if you don't need it, then I really think you shouldn't. And I'm going to stop here and step out and give you a minute break until Rabbi Litek starts. Anyone who wants to use their minute break to ask me a question, I'm happy to answer.